Folks, today's episode is brought to you by SiriusXM Satellite Radio. You may already know that SiriusXM brings you the deepest variety of commercial-free music for every genre and for every mood. That's where you hear the biggest names in talk, entertainment and comedy, and hundreds of hand-curated music channels designed to fit every mood. It's where you get news from every source. It's where you can listen to the newly launched Fish Radio, woo! In addition to Jam On, the Grateful Dead Radio, Pearl Jam Radio, Tom Petty Radio, and many more. It's where you can listen to top comedy channels such as Kevin Hart's Laugh Out Loud Radio and Netflix Is a Joke Radio, and sports talk radio from Barstool to ESPN and more to keep you up to date on the latest news in the sports world. Most people think you need a car to enjoy SiriusXM, but you don't. Subscribe now and listen outside the car, on your phone, online, and at home. And get your first 3 months for just a dollar. Visit SiriusXM.com/amigos, A-M-I-G-O-S, to see offer details and to subscribe and start listening today. That's SiriusXM, no car required. What's up? This is Mike Fenoya from Amigos, and Amigos Podcast is In The Loop, the legion of Osiris Podcasts. Osiris is creating a community that connects people like you with podcasts and live experiences about artists and topics you love. Check out OsirisPod.com and stay in the loop. Oh, hey, everybody. Welcome back to Amigos. This is your host, Mike Fenoya, on the Osiris Podcast Network, USA. I hope you guys are doing great. I've got a fun episode for you today. I have Ryan Stasek, the bass player for Umphrey's McGee, Omega Moo. This guy's awesome. Ryan is a fan of comedy. His mom was a stand-up comic. I do comedy, and he's a music player, and I like music, so I think we're best friends now, me and old Rye. But before we get into the chat, let's get to the business. As always, guys, listen, I ask, and if you've done it already, here's me thanking you. Thank you so much for going over to iTunes and reviewing and rating and telling your friends and subscribing. It really means a lot. It goes a long way. My bosses are watching, and you know how it is, guys. You know how it is when the bosses are coming down, breathing down your shirt collar. I don't have any bosses. I'm just fucking with you. I would just like you to go over and review. And if you want to, great. If you think we earned a 5-star rating, I mean, I think we did, but I can only review my own podcast so many times before they block me. Also, head over to social media, Twitter, Instagram, and follow at Mike Fenoya, MikeFinoia, and at Amigos Pod, AmigosPod. And then head to Spotify and follow Mike Fenoya there. And also keep an eye out for a little project that I have coming out called Still Chasing, about my summer following fish and looking back on almost a quarter century of following a band around the world. And I interview a lot of fun people and a lot of other fans and friends and people in the family with a PH, bruh. And it's going to be cool, and it's going to be coming out on Spotify as well as all the other mediums thereafter. So keep an eye out right around the dicks, the fish dicks run, if we make it through. Apparently there's going to be a tarantula migration. My little brother told me that down in Pueblo, Colorado, they have a festival where all the tarantulas walk across the street to try to find the woman. Try to find the woman to impregnate with their spider eggs. That sounds like a huge nightmare to me. And then we have prairie dogs with the bubonic plague fleas riding them, and that should be fun. So if you're on Molly, or if you're on DMT or K or LSD or whatever, a good edible, don't go petting little prairie dogs, because they're going to jump into your dreads, and then you're going to bring it back to the hotel. And when you go in the pool, some flea with the plague is going to crawl into a normal's butthole, and then you're going to kill the world. So just stop it, okay? I'm at Atlantic City right now at the Borgata doing shows, and I can't wait to not be in a casino. I like the shows. The shows have been going great, but I'm sick of living in a casino. I feel like I'm going to just – it's turning into like an episode of – the summer is just like one long episode of Twin Peaks for me. Casinos and buzzers, and you start to like look deeply into the eyes of the pharaoh that's on the slot machine, and you're like, are you my papa now? Because I've been in here so long. I'm excited to get out of here, and I'm going to L.A. this week. I'm going to be doing shows at the Comedy Store. I'm going to be doing Adam Carolla's podcast, so that should be out if you want to check me out on there. That should be coming out soon, next week sometime, 2-3 weeks. I don't know. I'll post it. And doing a show at the Comedy Store. And then I'm opening for the Impractical Jokers in Allentown, Pennsylvania. And then after Dick's, I'm going to be headlining the Comedy Works in Denver, Colorado, the Tuesday after the shows. So you get Monday to relax, maybe wash your feet in a tub, and then come see some stand-up. Go to MikeFenoia.com for dates, and then I'll be in the East Coast. I'm going to have a couple shows at the Fat Black Pussycat and the Comedy Cellar and a couple other venues, so keep an eye on the website. I needed a little bit of a pick-me-up as far as comedy was concerned. I felt like this summer was a lot of travel and a lot of when you're doing comedy, sometimes you have to – it's like being a pitcher and a baseball team where every now and then you got to intentionally walk or throw fastballs or throw at the batter, and you got to just know what pitch when. And sometimes when you're in a casino and there's 900 people with blue hair and jazzies and – walkers and stuff, you don't necessarily they may not know who Florence and the Machine is or kombucha, so you got to watch out what references you make or else you're going to really eat it. So I've been getting my I'm Mikey Chips. I'm casino comic Mikey Chips these days, and I don't know, I started feeling a little stagnant. So I wonder about this, if other artists or whatever, not to call myself an artist, but, you know, other people who do shit, if you ski, if you cook, if you snowboard or rock climb or play music or do comedy, do you ever go back to the people who influenced you and remember why you started doing this in the first place? I did that this summer when I was out in Portland, Oregon. I listened to every single thing that Brian Regan had out. Brian Regan, for those of you who don't know, is a comedian, a squeaky clean comedian that has my dream career. He's a guy who, if he was walking down the street, barely anybody would recognize him, but he's every comedian's favorite comic. He sells out theaters and colleges and, I mean, all over the country. I don't know if he does international stuff, but he's a sensational comedian. He's done 25 or so David Letterman sets. You could check all those out on YouTube. He's very easy to binge watch, and he's got his albums out on Spotify and on YouTube. And you know, I Walked on the Moon, the Epitome of Hyperbole, Me Doing Stand Up. That's Norm. I think just one called Stand Up. It's old. It's just a weird picture of him superimposed in front of like a cartoon brick wall. Looks like the brick wall that from the Janet Jackson's Opposites Attract video. Anyway, or was that Paula Abdul? Was it Paula Abdul or Janet Jackson that dances with Chester Cheetah in the video? I can't remember. Anyway, Brian Regan. It's so great to go back and listen to the stuff that influenced you and got you going in the first place. And Brian is somebody who his mannerisms are amazing, but his ability to hit pause on life and get rid of the whatever came before it and whatever is coming after it and just drill into the moment and dissect it and pull it apart and stretch it and just the way that he brings his thoughts to life on stage is just out of this world. And he's a guy who I've seen. I brought my little sister to see him, and he would do his new material, do an hour or so, hour 15, and then leave and then come back as an encore and say, anybody have any requests? And people would yell out bits. Grandmothers all the way to grandchildren would be yelling out, do the UPS bit, do the right field Little League bit. And he would get into character and do it better than you know, most comics do their freshest bits. And it's like, how the hell does this guy do it? So every so often, I think we get a little bit stale, and it's important to, you know, watch another comic or listen to another musician or go back and watch Tony Hawk if you're a skateboarder or whatever, and kind of be like, oh, fucking, yeah, these are the masters. This is why I got into it. So I recommend Brian Regan to anybody that is looking for a recommendation. But it got me motivated, and I'm writing a lot of new stuff, and I'm happy with it, and I'm going to work on it live in New York this fall and winter and hopefully put out an album in the spring. So Ryan Stasek's on the pod today. Ryan is in the band Umphrey's McGee. I really like them. They have, you know, I'm not into every jam band. I think they're way too tight and way too police, Tool, Beatles to be a, you know, full-fledged, noodly, fluffy jam band. I think they're fucking dynamite. And this band Doom Flamingo that Ryan started with some friends sounds like, if you've never heard it before, the way I would describe it to someone is picture Axel Foley, Beverly Hills Cop, driving around in a Trans Am at dusk trying to ponder why he can't crack this case right before the climax of the movie's about to happen. And there's that just chill funk metal playing in the background. Maybe Rocky training in the, you know, mid-80s with a Boss sweatshirt on. It's just that type of chill movie soundtrack driving montage music, and it's just kick ass. And Ryan is a super cool dude, and he takes time out of his day to chat with me, and we got into comedy. We got, his mom does stand up. His love of stand up, he goes when he's not at his shows, he's going to see stand up, which that's awesome. When I'm not doing stand up, I'm going to see music. So I think Ryan and I are best friends now, and I really loved chatting with him, and I love their music, and I love you guys. And I hope that you all love each other. So enjoy the episode and go find Ryan and Umphrey's McGee and Doom Flamingo. They're out on tour. They're going to be in Florida, I think, as this podcast drops. So enjoy life, and we'll chat with you soon, everyone. Peace. Hey there, this is Kyle Hollingsworth. You're listening to Amigos with Mike Fenoya on the Osiris Network. Ryan Stasek with me now. How's it going, pal?
You know, I always go with going great, but if you're being honest, I always feel like I'm lying when you know, shit's hitting the fan. So there's a lot of stuff going on, but I'm still just going to lie and say everything's great.
Well, you can't do that. What's going on?
No, I'm in the middle of like a house renovation, and I also just got back from the doctor because I busted up my pinky, my bass playing pinky.
Yeah, I saw that. How'd you do it?
Yeah. I was surfing behind a wake boat, and the cable got caught around my pinky, gave it a good crack.
Aw, man.
But good news, man, it's a fracture, so just the bone chunk is hanging my pinky, which will scar and heal itself over 6 weeks. The good news is that I didn't rip any tendons or ligaments or any, you know, long-term damage.
Yeah. Are you – I know you're a very athletic dude at, what, 41, 2? How old are
you? I'll be 43 in November.
All right. I'm turning 40 in October, and I'm a I snapped my humerus bone in half when I was living in Denver. I was snowboarding out in Colorado, and it slowed me down a bit. Are you loaded with broken bones and scars and shit?
No, I've only had fractures and stitches, but I'm not as injury prone as involved as I was, you know, growing up skiing with no helmet and in the trees and ice and just crazy, you know, riding skateboards and bikes without helmets and pads. You know, I'm actually pretty lucky.
So basically you were good at what you did.
I think I'm going to go lucky.
Lucky. Yeah. Right on. Right on. Yeah. Me and boards, I'm like a short Italian. Like I need to like be bocce and horseshoes, I think, is where I'm at right now.
Horseshoes are dangerous. I like bocce. I'm in the Italian lawn bowling.
Yeah, bocce's great. You got to go backspin, though. I don't know. These idiots always. That – I don't – you ever play with someone who talks a ton of shit and then they're not backspinning? It's like this always. Fucking tool's done.
Yeah, and it's funny you say that because that's why I was a few minutes late. I had to have a little therapy. I walked out to the beach. We're just a block from the beach to see my kids playing out there. And beach bocce is a little bit different strategy, you know, depending on the sand.
Oh, yeah, it just plops.
Yeah.
It just sits. I love when you're playing, like, suburban, kind of shitty backyard bocce the ball can hit anything, like a molehill.
Oh, yeah.
Or, yeah, that's fun. You got to play the terrain. That was always our rule. You play the terrain.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so you got a couple days in between shows. You were just in Chicago. How was that? The pictures looked incredible.
Dude, everything about Chicago, even though it was a quick run, was amazing. I flew in the night before and snagged 4 tickets to the Zanies 10:15 show.
Yeah, who'd you see?
That's terrible. I can't remember their names. They were local. One of the guys had just the second guy had relocated to LA, and I feel bad that I can't remember their names right now. But there is a great story, and it's kind of the shit that I live for. The third comedian I found to be hilarious. The bachelorette party of 22-year-old girls that we were sitting next to.
Oh, Jesus.
Did not. and his whole shtick and most of his bit was how much he hates being married. And he dislikes his wife and having kids with a mistake. And I mean, I was dying laughing. And one of the girls at the bachelorette party stopped. She goes, "You suck. You're a dick. And you're offensive." And I'm like, "Oh, here we go. This is it." You know. So the whole night was pretty awkward for the room, which I love as being an improvisational band.
Yeah.
You know, trying to read the room where, you know, at least comedy's so much harder, I think, and so much more respect for that. But when at least the people paying to come see you make music are a little more willing to let you take risks and be, you know, and dig it. There are, you know, there are dicks and assholes that aren't digging it. But comedy, to try and play a room of half-drunk people and make them all laugh – it's so difficult.
Yeah.
And this guy was, you could tell he it was feeling him a little bit. He handled it well. His transition was amazing. I probably can't repeat what his transition was, but I thought it was fantastic. But you have that shit when you have improvisation. You have that risk. You know, you don't know what the reward's going
to
be.
Well, you know,
but
it's
so fun to watch.
Yeah, man. And I appreciate, first off, I want to ask, was it Zany? Was it Old Town? Was it downtown Chicago?
Yeah.
So that room, for listeners, that is one of my favorite rooms in the country because it's super tight. The crowd is right up on the stage, and when you get laughs there, it punches you right in the face. Like,
yes.
I love that. And I mean, let's equate that to music. I mean, if you're playing a festival, you know, you hear that kind of quiet but loud roar in the back. If you're playing a tight room, you know, you're playing Toad's Place in New Haven or whatever, you're getting punched right in the face with like instant gratification or instant hatred. And that's
yes.
what I really, really love about Zany's. That room, the Comedy Cellar in New York City, which I do a lot too,
yep.
It's a very tight, right away you know whether they love it or hate it. Right now,
yeah.
I'm talking to you from the Borgata in Atlantic City. I'm doing 4 nights here at the Music Box. It's a 950-seat theater. And the way that it works is we do we kind of tag team. So basically, I go up, I do 20 minutes, I bring up the next comic, he does 20 minutes, he brings up the next comic, and we kind of rotate throughout the week.
Sure.
So like last night I went first, and I go up there, and it's like, you know, 75% blue-haired, you know, walking, like, you know, they have their walkers next to their seat, they've got jazzies parked outside the club, you know, it's just middle of the, you know, it's a Sunday night Atlantic City summer crowd, and then there's those bachelorette parties and those, you know, people that want to make it about them, and it's hard for some. I love it because I like the challenge. And
absolutely.
I think I get that from the music I love, and I talk about that. That's almost like the theme of this podcast, basically, is like the connection between the music and the – there are some comics where if one person yells out, I mean, they completely break down and start flipping out and screaming and yelling. If you're able to take it and twist it and make it your own, like, that's the fun part to me, you know?
Absolutely. That's part of the brilliance of the art, you know, is reacting and being able to to handle a curveball.
Yeah, totally. Know? So when you're out on the road, you're going out and doing some fun shit. Are you just a fan of stand-up, or will it be like a comedy club one night, an escape room the next day? Like, you know, are you just out seeing the cities, or?
Yeah, I've always, you know, I've never been a person who's good at sitting still.
Yeah.
Very antsy. But my mom, from a very young age, and who has also dabbled in stand-up.
No shit.
Took me to see. Yeah, yeah. She actually opened for Humphreys at the Kalamazoo State Theater twice to like 1,300 people.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Super cool. So she took me. I got to see George Carlin. You know, we saw a lot of stand-up. And then I'd always, when you know, in L.A., I got to catch shows out there when we get a day off, or so I always dabble and see what's going on and check. You know, luckily now everybody has computer magic at in their palms, and you can figure out where everything is and when it's happening. So I do that, and then we mess around with trying to be funny guys backstage with just the band.
Yeah, you
know, working bits, working my dad bits,
doing your papa material. Yeah, you know, yeah. That's one thing that I really like about you guys is the you can tell the sense of humor and the fun. I don't like going on stage from dead silence, standing on the side, waiting for them to announce me. I like coming on stage out of a conversation where I'm breaking balls with other comics back in the green room. Because yeah. I feel like you carry that energy onto – it's like going on a date nervous. Like when you go on a yeah. date nervous, everybody knows and you end up fucking blowing it, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, so you said that too when you were talking about the green room. You know, the other thing I love about Zanies is that after you bomb, you have to walk right through the crowd.
I know.
to go sit in the back in a chair. I don't even know if there is a. Is there a green room back there?
No, it's basically we go out in that hallway behind the club when it's like raining, snowing. It doesn't matter, and you go sit in like on a keg, on like an old keg.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Humphreys used to play a couple gigs in South Bend at Notre Dame. One of them was called Bench Warmers, and it was a corner like triangle of the room was a stage, and the only way you could get on was you'd go through the crowd and like jump up onto the stage. And I'll never forget this. In like 1999, our drummer had to use the bathroom, and he had to take shit. So he stopped. Our guitar player Brendan went up and played a little bit. It was horrible. But when he jumped off the 4 or 5 foot stage, I think a little came out. He was running, and then he had to go into the basement and get there, clean himself up, come back up, and finish the show.
No. Dude, that fucking pressure is crazy. I'm a pretty anxiety-ridden dude, but it's like the two most anxious times in my life, I think, are when I'm parallel parking while there's a line of cars waiting for me, and if I'm pissing at a urinal and there's like dudes right behind me waiting. Like I always tend those. I couldn't imagine having to like clean shit out of your ass and then go up and finish a concert.
Rock and roll, man.
Rock and roll is right. It was Brendan's birthday yesterday.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I didn't even get into the rest of Chicago. Yeah. So we did the nightclub, the comedy club. That was great. And the next day it was beautiful, man. We were out at this new venue, the whole skyline, the lake life. It was like 85 and sunny. Everybody was out.
Yeah.
The place was packed. The show was great. It was Brendan's birthday. And then Brendan and I did another gig afterwards. It was a late night. It was kind of a birthday celebration, too, with this band called Fate Night. Where basically you spin a wheel of karaoke songs, and then whatever comes up, we don't know how to play them, but there's little like dummy chord charts.
Dude, that's amazing.
Yeah, so it's a super late night drunk backroom bar feel, and then we have an 8-piece band, and we're just reading the charts, and Bayless is the lead singer and playing guitar and just having a really good time. So the whole Chicago was super fun, and then I had a 5 a.m. flight, so I just pushed through.
Yeah, you got to do it. Chicago's one of those cities that just like I don't know, man. It kind of feels like every time you go there, you're just like welcome to the party that's been going on. It's got a New Orleans vibe.
Yeah,
and I just love it so much. I think the crowds are so fun. They're just geared up and ready for a good time, and
New Orleans and Las Vegas, I just have like a 3-day limit.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I gotta get out of here. Chicago, I could stay a couple more days.
Dude, it's so funny you say that. All last week, I was at the Comedy Cellar has a club in the Rio, in Vegas, which is a little bit off the Strip, and we do a 7-night run, where you go do 2 shows a night. So I'm doing 14 shows in 7 nights, and It's just Vegas for a week, man, and it's just a lot. That's a lot of Vegas. I'd have a hard time with it. And it was 115, 116 degrees every day, so you couldn't even, like, getting out and hiking was kind of brutal. But you got to do what you got to do. You got to just get out and see stuff. That's the thing. Like, Atlantic City is pretty cool. They've actually kind of gentrified a little bit of the really bad area. They got a couple nice, like, beer halls and stuff that I'll, like, go jog to later or whatever. But,
Yeah,
it's hard to just sit still. You guys have it made, though, because you're traveling with a gang of your best friends. A lot of comedy is just, like, traveling solo, so you almost kind of have to, like, make friends with the weirdos.
Yeah, which is, you know, probably was a lot easier to do before everybody was beak buried in their phones.
Dude, I know.
Remember when people used to talk next to the people next to each other at an airport or a bar?
Yeah, yeah.
And now it's like, don't come inside my fucking bubble.
Yeah.
My headphones and my phone. And did you just smile at me? That's weird. I don't know what that is.
Yeah, then they film you and they're like, oh, that's that weird comedian smiling at people. Now you're a real fucking boob. I hate that, to be honest with you. I kind of feel like you and I graduated high school in 97. You guys were, what, sophomores in college that year. So you, like, got a couple years ahead of me. Mm-hmm. But that era was so fun to grow up in when you can, like, depend on your charm and your charisma and your ball-breaking ability to, like, make your buddies and, like, hit on girls. And, like, that was the fun part of life.
Well, especially when nobody knew where you were.
Ever.
You had an answering machine, and then you were forced to go meet new people, make new friends, or do something different that weekend instead of getting a text being like, yo, this is where everybody's at.
Right.
And then, you know, I remember I graduated high school in 95, but I remember if you didn't meet at the bonfire or the two meeting spots you had, nobody was telling their parents where they were going.
No.
You know, you had to have an adventure to track them down, and if you didn't, you made a new one. Or you went home and, I don't know, ate Doritos and played video games or something, whatever people did. But you at least for that adventure, you'd come up with something new. And the accessibility now is just – I was just listening to Joe Rogan's podcast with Maynard. I'm a huge Tool fan.
Me too, man.
And they were talking about one of Joe Rogan's comedy buddies, Ari. I'm not sure which one.
Ari Shaffir.
I think I love him. He's a funny dude.
He was just on my podcast last week. He's a very, very good friend of mine.
Oh, cool. Well, maybe this is the Ari he was talking about. He said that he went back to a flip phone.
Yep.
And then only keeps an iPad so he can be on social media when he needs to. So you just don't fall into that addiction of flipping through.
It's so fucking fun.
Unimportant, you know, Instagram feeds or whatever else people are wasting their time with their phone, you know?
It is kind of hilarious. Ari and I were just together. We had to, it's, you know, we won't dwell on sad stuff, but a comedy club owner in New York got murdered. And we had to go to his services. And I had Ari in my car with me, and we're driving to the services in a torrential downpour. And my phone is like fucking up, and I'm trying to, like, get the GPS to, like, how to get to the cemetery, and I'm like, look it up on your phone, and he pulls out this, like, Alcatel flip phone, and I'm like, god damn it, dude, like, what the fuck is wrong, you know? So it's hilarious that him and Dave Attell has a flip phone too.
Yes,
and
it's, he does. Just, I know
it's, well, so funny
too. One of my all-time favorites, man, that show, Up All Night, I used to
watch. Insomniac. Up All Night was Rhonda Schneer. Yeah. Remember that?
Yeah,
I think one of my first jerks was probably to that show. Attell was the reason why I got into stand-up. My grandfather and I used to hang out a ton. My grandparents and parents are super young. And he was like, you got to check this guy out. He's got the dream job. He goes and tells jokes, and then he hangs out with, like, garbage men all night. And
yes.
And I watched it with him. And now I've gotten to the point, like, I tour with Dave. Dave's one of my very good friends and a mentor, and it's like that to me right there. Is like the definition of success. Like, I've already made it. Like, the fact that I make that dude laugh is like head and shoulders above anything I ever could have imagined.
It's funny that you brought him up, because when I was a kid, my mom would go out and we had HBO, and I would tape the stand-up comedians, Rodney Dangerfield specials. So Sam Kinison and Andrew Dice Clay, I've seen all that stuff when I was like 7, 8, 9, and being the kid at school, you know, telling the nursery rhymes. So Sam Kinison was huge, because I always liked the rock star thing he was doing. But then when I saw David Attell, that was one of the things I even said to my friends, like, this is the dream job. Just go to different cities, do comedy, and then hang out in the middle of the night, get drunk at bars, and meet all the people. And then Greg Giraldo, who I still think was one of the greatest ever and one of the smartest
comedians,
and he was a friend of mine. And this is so, back to cell phones. This is crazy. While I was in the waiting, because I had to wait for like 45 minutes at the doctor for my finger, I was scrolling through Amazon and just bought his book. And I just, you know, somebody, I can't remember the guy who
Matt,
helped write it.
Or Matt Balaker.
Matt Butler. Butler or Balaker?
Balaker.
Yeah. So, and then with a click, I'm like, okay, it'll be at my doorstep on Thursday. So I ordered that, and I was like, wow, it's crazy. You can do this right here with your phone and look up things without having to go to a library like back in the 90s.
Ryan, it's so wild that you're saying all these things, because I just had Matt Balaker on the podcast probably 4 or 5 weeks ago, and we talked about writing the book and how Geraldo was – I personally think that he was – now, you know, let's talk about when you're in your art, right? I'm writing jokes. Yeah. You're writing music. There are certain people that you look at and you go – that dude just had a formula. He had a recipe in his mind where it was that legal, analytical, law degree brain where he could look at an observation and take it and totally dissect it and break it down so intelligently, and the right words he chose. I mean, Geraldo is an absolute like inspiration to me on so many levels. And
same.
And I really do look at some of the, you know, he had a he suffered from a thing called imposter syndrome. And basically, I don't know if you've ever looked up what that is, but it's like no matter how much you've accomplished or how good you're doing, you feel like a fraud and you feel like you're going to be exposed at any moment, that like you don't deserve what you have. And I talked to Matt about that and I'm like, that sounds very familiar. You know, I think a lot of times anybody that goes for it with creativity, you end up feeling like that. You're like, do I really deserve to be playing in front of these? Like, I get to tour with the Impractical Jokers. We just did five. Yeah. We did five basketball arenas where I was doing comedy at the Bridgestone Arena where the fucking where the Predators play. 18,000 people, and I'm like,
that's amazing.
The fuck am I doing here? Like, it's so weird, you know?
It is weird. It's you do have to be able to remind yourself that you do deserve it,
right?
You know, that's. You know, and I had a good conversation with Greg. It was at one of the Bonnaroos when we were hanging out. We were talking, and he's like, you know, like with comedy and being quick and clever, you know, some people are just born with it. Where just everything comes so quick and it's so good, and smart too. I mean, all of his comedy I enjoyed so much was so smart.
Yeah, he's brilliant.
Yeah, and I'm excited to get the book and read the book this week. I always like to get. That's another thing. I can't do Kindles. I have to have an actual book in my hand to read it. I'm on a plane so much. It'd be great to have such a huge catalog, but swiping on a tiny phone just doesn't do it for me. I need to turn the page.
Yeah, you know what I started doing a lot of is I download. It costs extra. I'm actually paying double, but I don't mind supporting the art. But I try to get an audiobook and the paper book, and I listen as I read. Because I've got I can't pay attention very well. So when I'm listening to someone read the book and I'm reading along, like Jeff Tweedy's book, I bought the audio book and read along at the same time. And it was kind of neat because you know his voice, you know what Wilco sounds like, you know that Tweedy.
Oh, is he the one reading the
audio book? He reads the audio book.
Cool.
And that's kick ass, man. I think an audio book really is all about the narrator.
Sure.
You know?
And your time, how you can do your time.
Yeah, absolutely. So that definitely helps. How did you ever think about doing stand-up? Was that ever anything that
I did. Again, I hold stand-up as far as art and like as compared to being a musician or anything, the most difficult. I have the highest respect of just trying to crush that room and go in there and read the room and make your comedy hit and be able to adjust and do it. It's so difficult. The only thing I've done is I've opened up for my not I shouldn't say open I emceed or introduced my mom like in the woods up in Michigan at a comedy bar.
That's so fucking just like, cool, man.
But just like one-liners and a few jokes just to get up there and do it. Little alcohol, you know. I was like, "This, hey, ladies and gentlemen, you should know this lady coming up. I should know her. I came out of her vagina.
Oh.
My mother, you know, just some stuff like that." We have a very different relationship. We're like friends in the way that we always watch comedy. And now that she has Netflix and YouTube, it's always stuff going through what she's watching and on repeat. And you know, like the first Sebastian Maniscalco. She loved that one when that first came out, his first comedy special.
Yeah.
And she's always telling me when I come home, she's like, you listen to any new comedy? Do you see any new comedy? Or, you know, and I'll tell her when I was in LA, oh, hey, Louis C.K. came and did a surprise set when we were in LA. And then, so she, you know, we have a very common interest about that.
Dude, that's incredible.
Yeah. I've never had the balls to go up and do like a 5 minutes of just unplanned jokes.
Yeah.
I do use my notes, and I'll write down like little bits here and there that I think could kind of streamline and come back together, but just sticking with music for now.
Well, I mean, dude, Jesus, it's interesting that you know, all this stuff that you're talking about too, is it's like that, there's that, when I decided to go for it with stand-up, I'm 39, I started stand-up when I was 29, I had had like a corporate job and all that, and I hated myself. And I was like, this isn't going to be life, right? Like, this is fucking right, boring. Yeah. I'm making money for some corporation. Like, who cares? And then I went up and I was on an awful, awful date in New York City. This girl was terrible. And I'm like, we walked by Caroline's on Broadway. And I go, let's go to a comedy club so I don't have to talk to you anymore. And we went in, and there was a sign on the wall that was like New Talent Night. And I was like, man, I've always loved stand-up. Let me see if I could like do it, you know?
Yeah.
So I wrote a couple of – there was like a couple of like classes, quote unquote, that you went to beforehand.
Yeah.
And I went, and the lady there was like, look, you've got the natural – you've got the charisma and whatever, but don't waste my time unless you're going to write jokes. Like come prepared. And I wrote 5 minutes of material, and like 15 of my friends came, and it was 6 other comics with 15 of their friends. So the crowd was primed. I mean, it was like, you know, when a little kid is like, come in the living room, I'm going to do a show, and everybody like claps. That's kind of what it was like. I did my 5 minutes. I got off stage and I'm like, oh, watch out world. Like the new Carlin's here. Like this is a piece of cake. I did that same 5 minutes at an open mic like the next night on St. Mark's in New York, and fucking people walked out. I got crickets, like, and I'm like, oh, this is comedy, you know?
Yes.
But once you get bit by that bug, man, it's like there's
absolutely
nothing else I want to do. And it's
absolutely.
I think what's important now too is just to kind of and I learned this from our music and our world, and by our, you know, like it's that level of like, what is success? It doesn't have to be fame. It's just, what is success? And I think that's something that's super important. So you now have – you got a family, you got 2 kids, you got 2 bands. Doom Flamingo is fucking incredible.
Thank you.
I mean, you feeling successful these days or what? You enjoying it?
Yeah. I mean, like you just said, success is all from what the opinion is. And my opinion is am I happy and do I like myself? You know, and the choices that I've made and all those answers, it's yes.
That's kick ass,
you know,
dude.
I love my wife, love my family, love my kids more than anything. I love my bands. You know, are there struggles and stress? Absolutely.
Yeah.
And does it, you know, does it even get dark? And absolutely, you know, but it's all about having that balance and that vision at the end of the tunnel. It's like, okay, we're going to get there. Okay. We're in a valley, you know, just the communication, all those parts. Is huge. Another thing that I like is the amount of exposure that comedy has now with all the Bonnaroos, even with the comedy tent.
You know,
like I never would have saw. This is probably 10 years ago or so, but like Bobcat Goldthwait had a movie that I probably never would have seen. But I happened to be trying to get out of this heat and went to the comedy tent, and when it was a screening of one of his films. I wish I could remember which one it was.
Yeah,
but it was great. You know, got to meet him like very quickly, briefly, and stuff. But I loved how musicians and comedians were overlapping.
Yeah, man.
And being able to hang out, because there's a lot of similarities there, especially when you talk about improvisation and being quick. You know, that's a huge part of obviously what we do. You have to be listening. You have to be reading the room. You have to be feeding the energy of everybody in the audience, all of your bandmates, and see which turn they're going to take and jump on it.
Yeah, it's really wild, and it's fun to, you know, you try to explain it to some people aren't really in the music that I love, and they're, you know, whether it's metal or hip hop, or maybe some people just aren't even into music, which I don't know how the fuck that even happens. But, you know, one of the biggest thrills of my life, Dave Attell brought me out on the road with him. I tour with him now a little bit, and we did a 2-man show at the DC Improv, which is a great room. If you're ever in DC, you got to check it out. And I went up and did about a half hour, and then he went up and did about 45 minutes to an hour. And then he brought me back up on stage every night, and him and I kind of like riffed and broke balls with the crowd. And
bumping mics.
Yeah, exactly. And it was like so amazing for him to trust me, and I had to almost, like, in the moment, you know, like, if you're skiing and you think about that you're skiing, you end up fucking crashing, but if you just stay in the flow and everything goes fine, like, I just kind of had to
think.
Yeah. I had to, like, remember, like, just do this, man. Dave trusts you for a reason. So, and it was just so cool for afterwards him to be like, dude, that was really fun. Like, I really enjoyed doing this with you. Come back up like tomorrow night and we'll do another one together. And it just ended up turning into like a fun thing that to know that I'm looking across the stage and I'm like, it's fucking Dave Attell.
I know,
and just,
legend.
And just to trust the, so from your perspective, and I always love, I look at music a lot different now that I perform. When you're up there and you're feeling it and you're looking over at the guys and you're having a great time, when you look out at the crowd, like what fuel, what energy do you get from the crowd?
I mean, everything. I love it. I mean, the people, I fuck everybody. I look and I try and find people, and it's different, you know, like sometimes I'll have to find someone that's absolutely losing their shit and that feeds me. And I'm like, yes, this person is digging this and they're into it. Well, there's also that part. And more so with some of the other guys in our band, where you find the guy who's in the front row and he's got his arms crossed and he just does not look pleased. And then to me, my goal becomes, I'm going to make this motherfucker wiggle. I'm just going to make him wiggle, you know, or I'm going to make him move. I'm going to get to him. Or if I have balls, I'm going to stare at him until it's so uncomfortable that he's going to look away. You know, something I feel like it's almost a competition at some point. We're like, okay. I won that one.
Dude.
He's here. He still bought a ticket and paid, so I know he's here for a reason. And then, you know, so I'll feed off of the crowd for that. But I've been doing recitals and never had a fear of the stage since I was five. The only thing that had ever had, you know, been scared is getting a microphone and doing stand-up. So one time I'd be like, yeah, I don't know right now. Sober. You know, I'd be like, yeah. Oh, I don't know if I can take that chance right now.
It's so That's just – no, it's incredible that like that's the comic brain in you, because when you're – I've had rooms where like the whole place is going nuts and there's like one asshole that's just arms crossed, like making deep eye contact with me, like letting me know he's not having a good time. And it's like
– And it's hard not to look back at him.
Yeah, it's like it's you and me,
like,
now,
keep
buddy.
Coming back at him.
Yeah. And I just can't let it go. And that's the guy afterwards where you're like – man, that one guy just, I don't know. I feel like the show didn't go well. And everyone else is like, what are you fucking kidding? It was great. And I'm like,
you killed it. Yeah.
That one guy, man, he just fucking did. Yeah.
Well, we had this one. We just played Red Rocks. And there was a guy in the front row and I'd seen him before. He wasn't moving. He wasn't showing any signs. And then I found out through an email later that he had snuck in microphones and had them in his hat. And he didn't want to move because he wanted the perfect recording.
Ah, Jesus.
And in my head and the band guy's head, we're like, what's up with the dickhead in the front? He hates us. He was unimpressed for 3.5 hours. He stood there so still. I thought he was at least going to show some sort of appreciation, and then it was nothing. Then I found out he was just smuggling mics.
Smuggling mics. Some people bump mics. This dickhead's smuggling mics.
Smuggling mics, yeah.
It's so funny. And like, no, go ahead.
Okay, another. Sorry, I got my little babies here.
No,
hey, Mickey.
Cool.
So one thing that did change, though, is that being in an improv band and being a bass player was – It took a few years where I didn't say yes to a lot of gigs or sit-ins, and it wasn't – I don't think it was out of an insecurity or it was out of a scared or anything. I was just like, nah, I'm good. I just don't want to do that.
Yeah.
You know, and then I got to a point where I started taking those chances and playing with different drummers and new people and meeting them and really realizing how much I was learning just from the experience. And even if it wasn't like the craziest, best gig ever or best hit ever, just having that experience and that notch to this point where it's like automatic, like, yeah, I'd love to. Let's go do it. Let's go try it. Let's do it. Because if you don't do it, you never know. You know, it's like cliche. If you never try or if you don't put your chips in, you can't win. You know, you at least got to take the chances.
Yeah. Well, and you know what else I think that comes with? And it's a lot of. You know, there are nights where I'll be doing stand-up, and I'm based out of New York City, and let's say The Cellar, for instance, I'm there, I'm hosting a show, and there's 5, 6, 7 comics that are going up, and a lot of times, you know, people walk out of the room, and you don't pay attention because you don't want to, you have this fear of, like, absorbing other people's material, and you don't want to steal, and you don't want it to, but once you gain that confidence in yourself, I think you're able to kind of watch and observe and dance a little bit with them and be like, man, that's pretty fucking great, you know, and you could pick up things that you know, it's not necessarily going to influence you one way or the other, but it's so fun to be able to, you know, be a part of a larger thing, you know?
Absolutely.
And that's, I think there's the tempo and the vibe. Like some comics hate hosting. I don't mind it because I think that it's important. I really, as a crowd member of hundreds of concerts a year, I get it. I want the crowd to have a good time. And if it's me that facilitates it, then God bless, you know, I'm honored to do it. So, you and I both were at the first Bonnaroo. You guys were playing. That's the first time I ever caught you guys live. And I was writing for Relics Magazine. And I was hanging out. I ate a ton of Molly. And they said, you have to go sell subscriptions. That was like one of the caveats to go into the show. And I sold so many fucking subscriptions, like all fucking spun out. I was like hugging babies, throwing footballs with dudes, like just making friends. Like I was like the Pope of Chili Town, you know, like I could have fucking won the mayor of Bonnaroo that time. But how incredible that was what it was back in 2000. What was it? 2002?
I think it was 2002. Yeah.
2002. That was like the most unbelievable little hippie festival where you're like, man, I hope this thing happens next year.
Totally.
Now look at it. Yeah. It's fucking Kanye and Jesus Christ. Yeah. It took off.
It's crazy. Yeah. It's funny. We were the only band that was camping in the artist camping area in 2002. Yeah. And it was one of those where we had a 9-person tent, and everybody picked their spots, and I'm usually not the first one to go to bed. So when I got back, you know, the sun was coming up, and it was just blazing. Manchester,
Tennessee.
Like 110 degrees. I was like, I'm not going to lay in this tent in the dying heat. So we just, the art of pushing through, you know, we pushed through again and checked out everything that Bonnaroo had to offer.
Yeah,
it was fun.
It's a fucking great time, man. It really is unbelievable. So you guys started out at Notre Dame. I love that. I'm a Notre Dame football fan. So
yeah.
That you're near and dear to my heart.
Nice.
Do you, When you go back to those days, you know, and you think about like starting out and shit, was it like, did you guys do that kind of like nerdy, you know, right from class, right to your room, practice for hours, go out and play? Or did you also have a social life?
Oh, definitely had a social life, but it wasn't more go to class. It was more like skip class, you know,
right.
try to get through the exams. If you could, you know, using that great memory and staying up all night for 2 days,
dude,
you know, cramming style to get through it.
It's so fucking crazy that like I'll be 40 in October and I have a recurring nightmare that I'm late to my math final. And I've had jobs, hundreds of jobs in between. And I don't have any fears or nightmares about being late to work. I have this one fear of like, it wakes me up in a cold sweat, like probably once every like maybe 3-4 times a year, where I'm like driving to my math final and it's icy and like I'm not going to make it. I don't know what the fuck it is, but like I never went to class.
I can't read your dream there. It's an interesting one.
Well, I mean, that's why I had you on.
I knew it. I knew it. And one thing that I was just discussing with my wife, though, is that my daughter's 6 and my other's 15 months. There's no way in hell I am going to send them to college when they're 18 for, like, who knows what it'll cost a semester then.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Because how the hell do you really, really know at 18 what you want to do with your life, except say, excuse me, bank, can I borrow 200 grand and be in debt for a really, really long time? Like, I just don't want to put them in that situation until they can really discover. Who knows? Maybe it'll all change by then, too. Maybe that'll become a more popular thing. But, like, student debt and student loans and
– I mean, dude.
That shit sucks.
I'm dealing with it now. I mean, I think I'll probably have it for forever. And it's, like, just because I forget. It's like bank account herpes. It, like,
right?
Shows up once a month and you're like, I forgot I had this. Fucking – this is brutal. You know,
yeah, but it's brutal. It seems like it can be avoided and figure out. I mean, I knew I wanted to play music. And then once I met the guys, too, we kind of did like the Frankie Valli handshake. Like, we're throwing this together, contract, and we're going to make it happen. And, you know, that kind of what it was. And I was like, I wish that I would have, maybe it's not relative now, but if I was able to go back to school, I would think I would be more productive with my time and my priorities instead of just wanting to party and I mean, it's such a social aspect of wasting money. when I wish I would have really, really learned something. I mean, I majored in Japanese and marketing, and I got 2 degrees, and I feel like I did well. But I wasn't there just for school, obviously.
Yeah, you probably should have just went back and majored in Japanese marketing, and you'd be a billionaire right now. It's kind of funny that, like, I went to college as a rebellious thing. My family's all blue collar. I'm the oldest of four. I'm the first one in my family to go to college. And I was like, my dad, when I graduated high school, he's like, so what trade are you going to do? You're going to be an iron worker, a plumber, whatever. And I was like, I think I'm going to go to college and be a writer. And he was like, good luck with that shit. You know, like, and I took out all the loans and I, you know, lived in a big house at University of Connecticut with my buddies. And we started a band called Downtown Brown. And, that was it, man. It was all about just growing up and learning how to, like, cook food and pay bills. Like, I didn't fucking care. I think the kids should, like, not be allowed to go to college until they're 22.
That's what I'm saying. Why allow someone to take out that kind of money and then put themselves in depression and debt for so long when you fucking just don't know what you want to do?
Yeah, man, totally. And, like, look, if you're Doogie Howser, you're Doogie Howser. You're going to, sure. Like, then you go whenever. If you're going to, like, go play tennis or chess or, you know, you're a football star, perfect. But, like, if you're just a normal, I don't know what I want to do, liberal arts, like, you don't need 2 years of art appreciation and Western Civ and all these other, like, go get your 2-year degree in nursing or whatever you want to do. And I wonder about that. How many people are actually using the degrees that they got? I'm not.
No, me either.
That's ridiculous.
I'm trying to use the marketing one. The Japanese one isn't working out so well.
Well, you never know. You could be the David Hasselhoff of Japan one day.
That's my backup plan, like Spinal Tap. Huge in Japan.
That's awesome. Dude, Doom Flamingo to me sounds like Axel Foley, Beverly Hills Cop, driving around in the middle of the night in California trying to, like, figure out all the clues that he's got in his head and, like, how to solve the case. It's the coolest fucking 80s.
That's very close. We were thinking more Miami in Lamborghinis with cocaine lollipops.
Dude, I'll take that too. It's so goddamn cool, man.
Thank you, man.
It's just,
thank you.
It's, how did that all come together?
Well, I have a couple side bands that I'm in. One of them is the Omega Moose, which is a different 80s. It's more of a Revenge of the Nerds type 80s throwback.
Yeah, dude.
Where it's more covers. And I had an after show a year ago here in Charleston, which is home now for about 7 years. And it fell through. And I told the manager, and I was having a conversation with my wife. I was like, you know, I don't really have any friends here or know anybody. And it'd be great to know some musicians and kind of get in on the scene a little bit for when I'm not being a parent or home life, just to know some people, know some cats. And we put together a group. And we gelled really well. The chemistry was there. And every one of these players and the whole scene in Charleston, for as small as this town is, the music scene is really dope. The cross of the gospel and the hip hop and the funk and the jazz and the community's really, really strong together. It's not like hyper competitive. It's really cohesive and it's awesome. And then we got together and we started writing original stuff and everybody, kind of, we all just chose this synth wave, the 80s nostalgia and vibe, but original and futuristic music, if that makes. And Kanika is such a strong singer. And
God,
she's
incredible.
She's awesome. She's incredible. And we have a record coming out. I've been so busy now that I busted up my pinky. I'm waiting to put down the bass parts, but we're very close. But we also have, so I came up with the name Doom Flamingo. I had Doom. I really like the word Doom. I just like the fat D, the fat O's, and the bubble M, and I thought it was a cool word. I liked the way it looked. I liked the way it sounded. And then my wife was joking, and she's like, you're not starting another, like, Humphreys McDude band that's all metal and no chicks go to, are you? And I was like, okay, touche. And then the next day, I was on the bathroom, and I was thinking, I was like, Flamingo popped in. And I wrote it down, and then I texted it. And then I texted it to the sax player in a band. I'm like, this is it. And, you know, of at first, like, I don't really understand what's happening, but it allows us to have that 80s vibe, and then you have the yin and the yang. You can have a doom wave and get really dark and synthy, or you can have flamingo where you're feeling those summer beach vibes. And I like that we were able to pull both of those feels off, and the name even allows us to do it more, to become more conceptual with it.
Yeah, and there's no bird that would like a cocaine lollipop more than a flamingo.
Dude, when you start looking for flamingos or talking about flamingos, they're fucking everywhere. It's crazy. It's really crazy. We took a trip to Miami right after that. I was with my wife, and especially in Florida, in Miami, I was walking around every tourist store. I'm like, look, babe, they're, everywhere you look, there's fucking flamingos. It's crazy.
Dude, that's so cool. I love the music. I think it's fantastic, and it's I'm in like Atlantic shitty listening to it, and it's making it a lot better. I check out, like, your Instagram is so dope and your wife seems so cool. I've got a cool wife too. Let's talk about our incredible wives for a moment.
Sure. Doing, yeah, she's pretty rad.
You know, the doing what we do and being out on the road and fuck, it's hard for the wives. And
yeah.
How important is it to have such a kick-ass support system behind you?
My God, it's everything.
It's the best, right?
Yeah, and the two of us, we're very similar in a lot of our character traits. So she's also a designer. She's an interior designer, and she designed our home that we're in the middle. I'm moving the rest of our stuff in tomorrow, so we're balls deep into a move.
Watch your pinky, bro.
Yeah, you know how stressful moves can be.
Yeah,
you know?
It sucks.
We're still married. It's good. But she's the rock. She holds it down. And then she knows that, you know, this gypsy life that I signed up for, that what I do. The hardest part is explaining it to my 6-year-old, being like, she's like, Daddy, you need a new job. You know, I gotta explain to you how much I would actually be, I'd be home less if I had a different job. But, you know, it's also good for her too. Because she's like, get out of here, because I got to get in routine, and I got to, you know, when we have the kids in school and we're finally moved into this home, it's better for us to have to routine and get shit done and stay motivated. And she'll be like, go back on the road and do your thing, and then I'll go on the road, and then I'll get sick of my band guys and come home, and then
enjoy
rediscovering each other and be like, I'm back, and then, you know, helping out here.
Yeah.
Humphreys has a good formula where we front load everything pretty heavy in the first two quarters, and then the summer is festivals, and then fourth quarter is kind of stay at home dad and relax and really be home. And as long as a hurricane doesn't hit here in Charleston, September through December is quite delightful.
That's wonderful, dude. That's really cool. I have a wife who is, she's a nurse practitioner, brilliant. She lives in New England and I live in Queens. And we have two, we're happily married, but we live separate because she's there. I have to be in New York to write for the TV show and do stand up and all that. But like, we have two small places instead of one big place at the moment. And we're both kind of hammering away at our, you know, respective careers, supporting each other. And then when we come together, it's really amazing because it's like, we have the, you know, we miss each other. It's like the tension and release. But but it's such a mature relationship that I've never had before, where it's like, I've had so many, you know, girlfriends that were like, you're never here enough. Why aren't you, you know, you're on the road, you're doing this. And it's like, this ain't going to work, you know, where she looks at my calendar and she's like, well, you got a couple extra weekends there. Maybe you can do, you know, this club, that club. You have it. And it's like, she's almost like managing on so many other.
Awesome.
Yeah. It's so.
Yeah.
And what was so funny, I met her when I was like early into stand up. I brought her to see me do a show at Long Island at the Brokerage, which is like, Long Island crowds are synonymous for just being like rough rooms, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm up there and there's like a party of like 60, like an Olive Garden commercial Italian family is just next, you know, they're all like, hey Vito, fucking get a glass of wine and shut up and sit down, like talking during my set. And I was so new.
Yeah.
I was so new at comedy. And I'm like, would you guys shut the fuck up? And they tore, dude, they crawled up one side of me and down the other. They're calling, like, ripping, look at that fucking shirt, you fucking poor piece of shit, yelling at me. And I'm trying so hard to hold it together, knowing that my new girlfriend is like watching. And I went over to the back of the room and I was like, that wasn't bad, huh? And she goes, are you any good at that? She goes, that's the worst thing I've ever seen in my life. And she proceeded to tell me everything I did wrong. And halfway through, I heard like doves chirping. And I'm like, I'm going to marry this chick. Like, that's exactly what I need in my life.
You know when you find your person, you know, that's what's important. And I have Mary Welch is definitely my person.
That's awesome.
And then kids, we have two kids too. And kids are just, talk about hilarious, man. They're the best.
Yeah, man.
There's just so much honesty and innocence. And you know, one of my bits too for being a dad is like, I've never lied to a person straight face more than I've ever lied to like my kids.
Oh, that's so great.
You know,
dude.
Bribing and like you'll never do this again for the rest of your, you know, just simple statements where they're completely false, but you're trying to get shit managed and done. It's pretty hilarious.
Yeah. Speaking of finding your people, and I just want to ask you quick, Jefferson Waffle. I know him from all the way back when I published my Ken Kesey interview in Relics. That was my first ever gig. Got to know him well. He's no longer going to be doing the lights.
Well, he's going to ride out the rest of the year with us.
Ride out the rest of the year, but you guys are So here's what I was thinking. My calendar kind of lightens up in the fall. I think he trains me. I open up for you guys doing stand up. I do about, you know, 10 to 15 to warm up the crowd.
Yeah.
You guys go up and then I'll run and do the lights.
We could be onto something here.
I mean,
except I'm, you know, we've had comedy a couple times. I told you my mom did it. I don't know if I told you this one though. One time we had Hannibal Buress.
Yeah, dude, I know all about it. I know Hannibal. Okay. I love him.
But the funny part was nobody introduced him.
I know. Like, I know.
Like, here's a black guy, a bunch of college kids at the Cal, he's like trying to tell jokes, and they're like screaming, "We want the oomph!" And I mean, he had to cancel it early, but it was pretty hysterical. I was like, "Dude, did nobody go out there and like say, ladies and gentlemen, some comedy and say your name?" He's like, "Nope." He still got paid. But I thought, and we had joked about that too when I saw that. And he was also when my mom took comedy classes at Zany's. And then she was trying to do original material because she's always been very good at memorizing and telling other people's jokes, you know?
Yeah.
And so he kind of helped her in a couple of the sessions write some material for herself. Because at the end of your classes or whatever, you go up and do 2 to 3 minutes for all your family and friends.
Yeah, that's what I did at Caroline's.
Yeah, yeah. This is a long time ago, too, way before Broad City and all that stuff.
Yeah. It's so funny when I open up for the Impractical Jokers, we have a tour opener, like the tour manager, and he goes, the lights go down, the place goes nuts, it's like 11,000 people. And then he goes, you guys ready for the Impractical Jokers? And the place goes fucking bananas. And then he goes, all right, well, before that, we're going to have this guy have to go out. And I mean, they know me now from writing for the show and all that shit, but it's like, God damn it, man. I'm like, I'd rather just go up cold, you know? Like, it's just so weird. But
So when you're writing with the show, are you writing with those guys for what happens during the show?
So are you familiar? You're familiar with the show?
I'm very familiar with the show.
Okay, so basically what we do, we're comedy producers is the title. And what we do is, let's say Starbucks wants to host a lot of people now. In the early days, we were like looking for places to shoot, you know? But now places like Carvel Ice Cream or whatever is like, you know, please come work with us or whatever. So let's say for instance it's like a tanning salon or whatever. What we'll do is as the producers, we'll kind of brainstorm games for the guys to play. Would it be funnier if they were an employee? Would it be funnier if they were a customer? Would it be better if they were a custodian or security or whatever? And then we brainstorm games for them to play, and then we pitch them to them. And if they like it, they take the ball and run with it, and all the improv happens, you know, right, like live. And then what else we do is we help come up with the punishments, and that's my favorite part. Like, I've gotten to know them very, very well, so I know, you know, what kind of will push them and what will, you know, really make them cringe. And there's another show, Inside Jokes, which is, I don't know if you've seen it, it's like the pop-up video of Impractical Jokers, where like these little fact bubbles pop up. For the past 3 years, that's been my gig. Like, I took on head writer for that show because it helps me have the freedom to like be on the road and do stand up and shit like that. So it's that's a fun gig because I get to go back and watch the old stuff that we created. So as writers, we're not really writing. It's not like we're writing episodes because all of it's real and all of it's improv. So it's a lot of fun. The thing that's tough about the gig is that now everybody's recognizing them. And
that's what I was going to say. Now it's got to be harder to find places because people know who everybody is.
Yeah, it's kind of brutal. And we have a very strict – like if you knew the show and the guys came up
–
and the guys came – I know. We went to Hawaii. We went to L.A., Florida. If you were on the if you were out in, like, let's say Central Park and we, you know, pulled a gag on you and then a PA ran over and said, hey, by the way, you were just on Impractical Jokers and you go, yeah, I knew the whole time, we won't use that material because it's just, and it sucks because we end up leaving a lot of really good stuff on the cutting room floor. But what are you going to do? Listen, man, you've got a ton going on. I had such a blast chatting with you. We have to do this again. And
absolutely.
I really was half kidding, half serious about the lighting gig and traveling and opening for you guys. So
Send in that resume.
Yeah.
We'll take a gander.
Yeah, I totally will. I think I ran lights at a couple of, Molly parties at University of Connecticut.
Hired. You're hired.
So listen, if you could just tell everybody that's listening to wrap up, where they can find all things you guys, on social media and everything.
Well, I'm easy to find. I'm just Ryan Stasek. I don't have any cool usernames anywhere. Never really thought about that back in the day. And then Umphreys.com is Umphreys McGee, and DoomFlamingo.com is everything Doom. And there's a lot of stuff happening there. It's super fun. I got some graphic comic book coming out. So we got a record coming out. We got some tour dates coming out. Umphreys is going back into the studio to record a new record, and then we'll be a little lighter in the fall. But we're playing in Iceland. That's another fun one.
That's
sold out.
So cool.
That's gonna be a good one. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, please hire me to do lights before then. I've always wanted to go to Iceland.
You got it, man.
Adios, amigo.